Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning, talking all things NFL. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
Doing very well. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, the Titans will be playing Jacksonville on Sunday, and we'll see if they can approach blocking somebody to protect Will Levis. We were having a discussion earlier about the AFC South with the way that Jacksonville has played at home so far this year, and what a big win for C.J. Stroud in Houston on Sunday at Cincinnati. Can the Texans do this? Do you think the Texans can actually pull this off and win this division this year in C.J. Stroud's rookie season?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Texans, even though Stroud gets the vast majority of the attention, which, you know, I think he deserves, the Texans are more fundamentally sound than I think a lot of people realize. I mean, if you watch them defensively, I'd argue that a massive part of this turnaround has just been what D'Amico Ryans has been able to do with that unit. I mean, they're fast. They fly around. I hate to use the cliches, but if you've watched the Texans defense in recent years, it just looks like a completely reborn unit, and it reminds you of some of the things that Ryans was able to do with the 49ers. And, you know, so to me, though, when you look at that, you ask the question about the division and can they do it? Yeah, well, I think defensively is really going to tell as much of the story as, you know, Stroud is. I mean, Stroud's been fantastic, but, you know, look at the rest of the schedule they have, okay? Arizona, Jacksonville, Denver, Jets, Titans, Cleveland, the Titans again in Indianapolis. I mean, with what just happened with Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, obviously the struggles in Tennessee with, I mean, everything, this last game anyway. The Jets still have an issue at quarterback. I mean, it really, other than Jacksonville, right, and they're getting Jacksonville at home, those are all games that the, you know, Texans feel like they're going to be in, that they're going to have. I almost wonder how many of those they'll be favored in moving forward in terms of the odds makers. So I love Stroud. I love what he's doing. He's handled adversity there in a way. Like, their offensive line, it's playing well, but it's not like it's been healthy all season. They've been banged up all season long. I worried about that in the preseason because when he didn't have clean pockets in the preseason games, he looked bad at times. And I was like, man, maybe they can't even start. Maybe Davis Mills has got to start for them. But, you know, since the regular season has started, he's been like nearly perfect. He doesn't turn the ball over. He handles pressure really well. He moves around really well. Almost everything you could have asked from him, they are getting. And it was funny after the Watson, it's not really funny, but after Watson was shut down for the rest of the season, I was texting with somebody, the Texans yesterday, and I was like, "I, it's so crazy to me that the best thing that happened to your organization was Deshaun Watson being like, I want out, like, get me out of here." And the guy was like, you know, I literally remember being in practice and that season he was sitting out and thinking, like, maybe he'll just change his mind and it'll save us. Maybe he'll decide, I want to be here, and it'll totally change us. And he was like, and it probably would have ruined us. And it's just, it's the NFL is so crazy sometimes how something you think is the worst thing that could be happening ends up being the best thing, because obviously it's the thing that really remade the Texans, getting away from him, finding the right coach. They still have draft picks from that trade that they haven't even used yet. So it's just remarkable how much things change. I was thinking too, before I came on, about Joe and I, like, debating on the show during the 2020 season. We're like, you know, how could Tannehill not be a Pro Bowl quarterback? And then you put Watson in there, and yeah, Watson's having this statistical. And I was like, we had no idea. Like, at the beginning of the end of that conversation forever.
It is wild. Gosh. You think about Houston, like, it doesn't feel like that long ago that like Brock Osweiler was the big hope in H-Town, and now it's amazing how things work out. Meanwhile, they don't work out so well in Cleveland. So, first of all, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, I'm only a Twitter doctor. But it seems weird to me that this is not related to the last thing. I know they said it isn't, but either way, right. What a blow for them. And what does that leave the Browns?
I mean, we'll see. If you do the math, so when he is going to – so out the rest of the season, right, and he's going to have surgery on his throwing shoulder on an injury that's, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Like, they're confident that he's going to come back fine and no problem, and it's, you know, hey, it's the kind of injury that you want to tackle. It's a broken bone in there, and it's the kind of injury that you want to tackle earlier than later. And, you know, again, they're confident that everything is going to be fine. But I'm like, if he makes it back for the start of the regular season in 2024, in 3 years and 9 months, or 3 years and 8 months, so about 4 months shy of 4 years, Deshaun Watson will have played in 12 NFL games that counted. 12 in almost 4 years. That's insanity. Like, it's crazy that there's just this presumption. I ended up writing about this, that there's just this presumption that he's going to regain form in Cleveland, that he's going to recapture what he was. And I'm like, it's. I know he's 28, but once injuries start to pile up, we have seen with some quarterbacks, particularly when you start getting into that throwing shoulder, it can change the trajectory of who they are really quickly. And they'll never – I mean, Cam Newton, I remember there was a time when I talked to someone in Carolina when he had to have surgery on his throwing shoulder. Like, he'll be okay. You know, he's going to come back from – and he never did. It ended his – I mean, effectively ended his career. He was never the same player again. And I'll give you a good one, too. Like, this was – I started to go back and look. Like, have we ever seen situations where we saw a quarterback who was supposedly in the wheelhouse of his prime, had achieved these heights, and then it just took a left turn and it never came back? We're all, I think, old enough to have this conversation. There was a quarterback who had one of the best quarterback seasons in NFL history. 5,123 yards from scrimmage, throwing and running, 41 total touchdowns, literally one of the greatest quarterback seasons in history. He's 27 years old.
Dante?
He played five more. What's that?
Dante?
Who do you think it is?
Culpepper.
Yep, Culpepper.
Yep. Boom! Nice.
Played five more seasons after that, never threw more than six touchdown passes because he suffered a knee injury in the year after that mega season.
The plight of Nick Saban.
Right. They chose him over Drew Brees. Nick Saban's still angry about that. It's people completely forget that ever happened because now that season, I mean, that was one of the greatest seasons ever. He was, you remember how exciting he was? And everybody in the NFL was like, oh my God, this guy's like a linebacker playing, you know, quarterback. But he also took a lot of physical punishment. He took a lot of punishment. So does Watson. He did with the Texans. He's got surgically repaired, you know, ACLs in both knees. He took a lot of hits with the Texans. Part of that was because of how the Texans, you know, built the roster around him. But part of it too was how he played. He would play to make plays and put himself into positions where he should have thrown the ball away. Instead, he's taking hits. And I remember at the time that was like, even when things were going well, it was like, well, we got to coach this out of him because eventually he's going to start to have injuries. Well, this entire season, I'm like, wow, this is like one injury after another with him this year. And he was taking a lot of punishment with a good team, by the way. And so now he's going to come back from all this next year. Supposedly he's going to be fine. We'll see, right? Like, I don't know. I don't think there's a guarantee now that this works out for Cleveland or Watson, that he gets back to what he once was. And I think it's the injuries to me and the lack of meaningful football in 4 years that you start to get worried about how easy it's going to be for him to go back to what he was. And let's remember that time that Joe and I were arguing about Tannehill versus Watson, and that was Watson's peak year. He was really good. They had a terrible record. He was really good, but I think you would have argued then he still wasn't complete. They were still working on, again, getting him to play healthier football, some aspects of his game where he's taking chances, whatever. But, man, that is a lot for Cleveland to worry about with the contract that they gave him. And now they have 3 years now to try and get this right. And if we're being real about how quarterback extensions work, 2 years before you go back to the table. How crazy is that? 2 years before normally you'd go back to the table and start having extension talk.
So, Charles, as you can imagine, lots of Titans fans around here looking towards the future at this point with the way the season is going. And we keep getting questions about T. Higgins every day. So, T. Higgins, obviously this year, it's been a little bit rough for him from an injury standpoint and Burrow was hurt at the first part of the year, and he's not playing tonight. Higgins, that is, not playing tonight against Baltimore. Where do you think things stand right now with Higgins and Cincinnati? And if he does make it to free agency and Cincinnati can't get a deal done, how much interest is there going to be out there for Higgins?
I know it's been not the ideal year for him, but I think he's universally viewed as a number one wide receiver. And I say that because, you know, when the trade deadline came and you're talking to a different team, there were, you know, quite a few wide receiver needy teams. When you end up having conversations with some of the, you know, GMs or whoever you're talking to, often it'll be like, okay, well, could you, you know, make the move now? Are there receivers you could potentially reach into the draft for? And then what does free agency look like? That sometimes drives these trade deadline deals as they look at a window. And multiple brought up like, well, you know, T. Higgins probably going to make it out of there. Like, they just couldn't see Cincinnati financially, given the weight of, you know, where it's going with Ja'Marr Chase, obviously given the massive deal that Burrow just signed, you know, and they have a number of other concerns. You know, I think they still want to sink more money into the offensive line, that, you know, having that number two receiver who's going to want to command number one money is like a luxury that they just can't carry. And most teams aren't going to carry two guys that are going to make, I don't, you know, what, $23, $25, $27 million. You know, that's what, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is going to be a $25 million plus APY player with a ton of guaranteed money. T. Higgins, he goes to free agency. I mean, he's going to command in the neighborhood of, I would expect, you know, 23 plus APY, 25, because there will be teams, again, that will look at him as being a number one quality receiver. I think the Titans, you know, if you're going to go after him, you have to assume that that's what he's going to be for the future of your organization. The good thing for the Titans is you're now working with a rookie quarterback salary moving forward, right? I mean, it gives you some flexibility that maybe some other teams don't have. If they already have a veteran salary at quarterback, you can pay a heck of a lot more to a free agent wide receiver when at least you know the quarterback's cheap for a few more years. But yeah, I mean, look, I sense when you talk to other teams that are eyeing like their board moving forward at wide receiver and what options they're going to have both in the draft and free agency, I think they believe that the Bengals are not going to end up paying T. Higgins the amount of money that he wants, and that even the tag at this point is prohibitive enough that maybe the one decision they could make is like, okay, you know, do we use the tag in this scenario for him, keep him for a year, and then after that we make a decision, like we just sort of push for it for 1 year and then we have to let him go. But I think teams are preparing for, you know, him being out there and having the money ready for him as a number one wideout.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We continue our conversation with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports.
So, Charles, speaking of quarterbacks and issues and whatnot, Buffalo's got a problem, but Ken Dorsey is the one who pays for it. Is that fair or not?
Yeah, I think it's funny. So do you think, let's say that they don't have 12 men on the field, right, and that they win that game, but the missed field goal stands and they walk off the field. Like, Ken Dorsey probably has a job, right?
it's crazy to say, but I think you're probably right. It just it's the misery of the loss.
Right, and he didn't have anything to do with the 12 men on the field, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, like, we can say in the grand scheme there were the turnover, you know, the Josh's turnovers and, you know, whatever. Obviously that matters and that weighs on him.
Maybe Ken sent the extra guy out there, just overstepped, you know. Get out there!
It feels like one of those situations where Sean McDermott felt like he had to do something. Like, it's like, I have to do something to shake this up. And it was interesting when he talked after that game, and I think it might have been actually when they fired Dorsey. He was mentioning things when he was talking about the quarterback position. He said confidence came out of his mouth when he was talking about the quarterback position, which I was like, okay, that's a little concerning, because we thought with the trajectory of Josh Allen that at this point in his career, he would be the guy basically molding the offense, that he would be in his wheelhouse. And, you know, as a veteran at that point, especially with that talent level, you start to sort of dictate, here's how I want, you know, here's what I want to run. I have a mastery of what we're doing now. Here's the personnel that I work best with, that sort of thing. You would hope he starts to get to that stage, but now they're, you know, talking about confidence. And then he mentioned anticipation at the quarterback position, like as in like playing quarterback. And I'm like, really? We're still talking about, you know, is Josh Allen anticipating aspects of what are going on in the football game? And that's, he's not. And that's what's leading to some of these turnovers. An insane number of turnovers in 5.5 years. I wish I had the exact number. I know it was like 100+ turnovers in 5.5 years, which is nuts. And it's clearly something that continues to plague him. Everybody, including me, has at times pointed to Brian Daboll, because it seemed like when Daboll was running that offense, he had gotten to a point where he was able to keep some of Josh Allen's sort of risk-taking behavior in check. There was a little less of the hero ball at times. But that said, Allen ran a lot when Daboll was there. And people forget that it felt unsustainable at the time. Like, we were like, man, he can't keep doing this. He's going to get hurt. It's going to, you know, he's going to suffer some kind of injury that could potentially change his career if he keeps doing this. He ran a lot less under Dorsey. And yet we still have these turnover issues. And it, you know, McDermott just saying like, hey, we need to change like the energy around the unit. I don't know. Statistically, it looked like it was producing maybe not on a touchdown scoring level, but at least a yardage level. Maybe that doesn't really even matter anymore in the NFL. But I mean, it was similar what in terms of what they were able to produce under Dorsey and the previous OC. So, I mean, like, it's just, I don't know. They're 5-5. It feels a little desperate, like you're scrambling to just try to change the mojo, you know, in the team right now and hoping that moving, you know, Joe Brady up sparks something. But it's amazing to me that following that 13-second collapse, and I know people hate that I draw this line back to that game, but it feels like just a different team and a different trajectory since then. It just feels like they never really got up after that 13-second. They collapsed, they lose in overtime, and suddenly it went from, well, this is going to be the Buffalo Bills era, right? This is it when they knock off the Chiefs and, you know, become a, they're in the Super Bowl window, they anchor the AFC, they become the bullies, and it has not gone that way at all. And despite fine-tuning the roster, by the way, you know, adding pieces to that roster and seeing some growth in Allen, and yet now we're looking at them as a team that's extremely vulnerable. You're asking questions about Stephon Diggs, which now feels like it's become an annual thing there, like it did in Minnesota. So, man, just not... not a great situation, and I think if this doesn't work out, they've replaced both offensive and defensive coordinators have changed in the last 12 months, so who's next? It's got to be McDermott, right? I don't know how else you look at the situation and go, where else do we change?
So, Charles, on the flip side of things from that game the other night, Russell Wilson completed 83% of his passes, and the Broncos have won 3 games in a row. Has Sean Payton fixed the Denver Broncos in your mind?
They're playing better. There's no question. I mean, also defensively, yep, they look better. They look like a better defensive team after moving on from Randy Gregory, Frank Clark, two moves that did not surprise me. I mean, those are not Sean Payton type of guys in the building. And, you know, I think again, and they moved some younger guys into the starting lineup. And at the time, Sean said, you know, we feel like these are guys that are just going to give us a better chance to win. They're going to play the brand of football that we want. And defensively, we think we can clean this up, and they have. And then Russ, slowly but surely, he started to look again like a player that can be workable with Sean Payton. I mean, Cortland Sutton has had, it's funny because I was like, this is sort of over for Cortland. Like, I thought it was going to be a middling wide receiver moving on. I was like, he's a big guy, but, you know, just doesn't move. Felt like he didn't move the same way he used to. And that his, you know, he was just sort of flattening out in as a player. And he's been great. He's been fantastic. I think that touchdown that he scored along the end zone, the edge line, which was unbelievable, by the way, to get his feet in. That was the seventh in the season. That's the most touchdown catches he's had ever in the NFL in a single season, and which is, it's wild. Like, he's sort of, in a way, been reborn in the red zone as a player, you know, for Peyton. And, you know, Judy at times has had upside. I thought it was interesting in the game when the Bills at the end, you throw a zero blitz at Russ, and in, I guess, pre-Denver days, if you're playing against Seattle and you throw a zero blitz at Russ, you're like, he throws a deep ball, you know, he gets a ball, he can get the ball out, and that's usually going to be a mistake. It did in this game. They end up with a pass interference penalty, but it's sort of the same situation. It was, even though Russ underthrew the ball, he was able to get the ball out in a zero blitz and put them in an opportunity to make a play. And that's how a lot of that is, by the way, coached now with receivers. If we can't get a desperation ball at the end, get the PI, you know, run through the defender trying to get to the ball and see if you can draw the flag. So I wouldn't even say that was luck. You know, I think that's something that you get coached to the position. The quarterback, the wide receiver knows it. You get a zero blitz look, he throws the ball, you get a PI, and next thing you know, you're lining up for a field goal. So definitely positive things happening, you know, after that start in Denver for Sean. And I said the same thing for Kyler Murray that I would say for Russell Wilson. The best thing that these teams can possibly have happen after they've already doled out these deals is making life workable with quarterbacks that you're already paying, and you don't have to go through salary cap hell to get out of it. And, you know, I think if Russ is a viable player, I think he's 90% of what he was in Seattle. I think they're going to be in good shape.
All right, big picture question for you, Charles. It is related to the local professional football team here, because now all everybody's talking about is Levis and, you know, not getting him hurt, not quote-unquote ruining him. Some people worried about him being ruined. In your just big picture, how many quarterbacks – is that a thing that you think is a frequent thing in this league, that quarterbacks – I mean, I know we can all talk about the David Carr example. Right? I mean, it was
right,
in
yeah.
Houston. But like,
but that was a number of years. That wasn't just 1 year. That was a lot of years. But
yeah. How often do you think that – how big of a concern is that in general for a quarterback who has bad protection? Because to me, I look at it like you got to be able to handle that stuff and get through
right?
But, I mean, I suppose it is possible.
I think you have to have a read on mentally, like what kind of a person, like a player mentally the quarterback is. Because I do think – some guys, if they get shelled, like the last thing you want is to see the clip of Sam Darnold in New York saying, "I'm seeing ghosts out there," right? Like that just scares you, like as a coach, because you don't want it to turn into something where you have a quarterback who is under pressure so consistently that all of a sudden he's now expecting to get hits. Like that's in his head when he's running around making plays, and it starts to affect where are his eyes going? Is he really still looking downfield? Is he moving when he doesn't? Like, that was one of the things with Sam, where when I went through the Jets and it hadn't worked out, I was like, you know, why did it break down? And they would talk about, you know, he's not getting to his second read, and you would see him unnecessarily starting to move around in the pocket when he didn't need to. Like, it was fine. The pocket was holding up. And yet he felt like, no, this feels familiar to me. I need to do something here. And they were like, I remember being told by someone in the building, like we could see that was when it started to change who he was going to be as a player, because he lost this trust. And it definitely was because of the hits, you know, how often it happened and how consistently it happened. And so you're going to have some quarterbacks that get antsy and mentally can't take that. You're going to get others who, I hate to use the whole toughness thing, but you're going to get others that will go, no, okay, I'm going to hold on to the ball. I'm going to make a play. I'm going to take the hit. And I'm going to get up and I'm going to keep going. You know who one of those guys is? Kirk Cousins. We never really got a lot of credit for that until the quarterback, the Netflix series, that quarterback series where people are like, man, dude takes a lot of hits. He gets hammered a lot. And mentally, it doesn't affect him as much as we all think it does. Like, he actually does play really well. And there's a reason why Kirk Cousins was playing some of his best football this year when he went down. You want players that are able to take punishment and not really stylistically have it change how they play the game, you know, every point moving on. You want to still be able to build on that. But so with Levis, I think the question is, can he handle, you know, what do you know about his mental makeup? Can he handle this? Can he handle the punishment that he's going to get? Clearly that line is going to be an issue all season long. How can you then resolve that after this season, right? Because you don't want to replicate 1 year into the next, and it becomes a trend in his mind that he's always going to be getting hit. But I actually thought already we've seen, I mean, he's taking a lot of hits, and I'm like, man, he keeps getting up. He's like, you know, and there were times where, because the line, sometimes when you have offensive lines that aren't able to protect, quarterbacks will do things to allow deeper routes to develop. They'll back up. It's like especially you see it with strong arm quarterbacks, and sometimes it's designed, sometimes it's not, but you will see them backpedal a little bit to let a deeper route develop, knowing they have the arm strength to then wing it, get the ball out there, but they're going to take a hit in the process, and they know it. I kind of like it when I see guys do that, and I felt like I've seen Levis do that a couple of times where he was like, nope, going to take the hit, you know, going to try to get this ball off because that's how we're going to make plays down the field, even though we don't have great protection. If he can do that and not break eventually or get hurt, as you said, that's another thing. It's not just mental, it's physical. Then I think it can ultimately be a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a fair question to ask. Like, you know, at what point do you have to start to change things to protect him? I don't think sitting him down, I don't think that's a good idea. I mean, you should have a coordinator who can go, okay, let's figure out max protect. Let's figure out what can we do. Maybe the offense isn't going to be, you know, it's not going to be a highlight reel offense. It's going to be pretty rough. But, you know, first and foremost, let's protect Will and let him develop the parts of the game that he can with a bad offensive line. But I totally get the conversation. Absolutely. I was going to ask you guys, I'm like, how would you go about now with that offensive line rebuilding it going into the offseason? Because I feel like you got to sort out the tackle spots.
Yeah. You have to do a lot.
You change positions for some guys. Like, where would you guys know the team you there? I mean, you go, where do you begin? Like, who are you keeping? Are you moving them around on the line? And then is just a foregone conclusion that you're going to devote a lot of draft picks and money to the offensive line? I would ask that before T. Higgins. I know T. Higgins is sexy. People, you know, I get it. I totally understand that. I would fix the offensive line before I fixed anything else or started going getting luxury items off the shelf.
Yeah. Your left tackle.
It's a great point. Left tackle in the draft, I think, is going to be essential. Charles, great stuff.
And there's some good ones.
There are some really good ones.
Good one. That's the upside. There's a couple really good left tackles.
So. Absolutely. Charles, great stuff, man. We're not going to have a show next Thursday because of Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
I appreciate it, guys. Hey, Joe, take care of that hand, all right, buddy?
If you're looking at the stream, look at that. It's pretty gross.
He's tough.
Yeah.
Just pure toughness.
I'm not seeing ghosts.
From Rex Road.
Thanks, Charles.
Charles Robinson, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.